Chapter 4. Styles' plan is to go to school the next day, whether he's supposed to or not. He's done with the makeup work packet, and doesn't really want to sit around the house with nothing to do. But when he tries to get up, his body stages an immediate rebellion. Apparently, his father was correct, and cleaning the entire house the day before had not been a good idea. This leaves him in a somewhat grouchy mood. He texts back and forth with Scott until their jerk chemistry teacher yells at him and takes his phone away, which annoys Styles, though he supposes that he shouldn't be encouraging Scott to goof off in school. His grades had been decent up until the werewolf debacle, and they had talked about applying to some of the same colleges, although neither of them really had a clue what they wanted to do with their lives. He thinks about staging a grades intervention for Scott, or maybe just doing some of his homework for him. Since schoolwork is out, he goes online and reads about guns and shooting and different ways to kill werewolves. He had wondered for a while why the Argent family used wolfsbane-laced bullets instead of silver bullets, and finds out that silver bullets are actually impractical, because silver melts at a much lower temperature than steel. Silver is softer, too, easier to deform. Some werewolf hunters use steel knives with notches filled with silver, which he finds interesting. But he's not a big guy and not very athletic, despite his underappreciated prowess at lacrosse, so he decides guns are the way to go. He's also interested to find that wolfsbane isn't only poisonous to werewolves. Aconite is lethal to humans as well. He supposes that it's probably a difference in dosages. It's used in medicine, and a quick Google search reveals a place to buy seeds. He thinks about it, then bookmarks the site and closes the tab. Maybe later. By the time his father comes home with a bucket of KFC, Styles has a million questions about the weight of different guns and what sort would be best for him, how some bullets are faster than others, and how long it takes to get good at this sort of thing. He peppers his father with these questions while his mouth is full of chicken and biscuits. And Stilinski answers them because he's used to this sort of behavior from his son. Really. They drive down to the firing range, and Styles gets clear plastic goggles and giant blue headphones, and gives his father a rather goofy grin. Stilinski snaps a picture of him with his cell phone. Styles can't really blame him. He supposes that his disinterest in firearms has disappointed his father, who likes his guns. Not in a bad way, but still. The man likes his guns. He's heard all the lectures before, but now he gets them again. One more time. Don't point the gun at anyone you're not willing to shoot. Don't be willing to shoot unless you're willing to kill. Don't point the gun at walls or ceilings or anything a bullet could ricochet off of. Don't put your finger on the trigger unless you're prepared to fire. Don't fire into the air. He doesn't care how much Styles loves Point Break. The lecture takes about 10 minutes, and he nods through all of it. Then his father goes through what the different parts of the gun are called. And Styles knows all this shit because of his reading, but he listens anyway. Then they move on to firing stance. Stilinski shows him where his feet should go, how his shoulders should be arranged, elbows, wrists, the whole deal. Once his stance is perfect, Stilinski has him shake out of it and then get back into it to see if he remembers. He does that 3 or 4 times until he has it correct without help. Then they work on his grip, which, according to his father, is even more important than stance. Styles feels pretty good about this. He is on top of this shit. They move on to aiming, and then he fires his first real bullet. It knocks him backwards into his father, who's standing behind him to brace him, and the bullet goes absolutely nowhere near the target. He lets out a whoop of laughter. The whole thing seems ridiculous. His father laughs too. He gets through the entire clip before he even hits the target. And even then, he only manages to clip the shoulder. Still, his father is nodding approvingly, so it doesn't bother him that much. He takes a break while his father shows him how to load the gun and talks to him about when he unloads it to always make sure he checks for a bullet in the chamber. By the end of the session, he can hit the target 2 out of every 3 times. And even if his aim won't kill a person, let alone a werewolf. It would at least slow them down enough for him to run like hell. He feels pretty satisfied, all things considered. "So, when do I get a gun?" he asks as they drive home. Stolinski gives him a look and then sighs. "Son," he says, "you're still a little too twitchy for me to start buying you firearms."
"Hey, no, I'm handling this really well, remember? You said so,"
Stiles responds, perhaps a bit smugly. "Yes, yes, you are," Stolinski says, clearly not ready to budge an inch on the firearms issue. Stiles lets it go, because he already knows where his father keeps his guns, and the key to the lockboxes, even the ones he thinks Stiles doesn't know about. So he just goes home and pretends that everything is normal, and listens to Scott bitch over Skype about that bastard Harris confiscating his phone, and Allison's upset because Kate's funeral is Sunday, and how they're going to totally kick ass at the lacrosse game tomorrow. And Stiles is going to be there, right? Stiles is noncommittal on this subject, because he finds himself strangely unwilling to go anywhere near the lacrosse field ever again, and just says he'll see how his dad feels about it. Then he goes to bed. He wakes up at about 1:30 after a bad dream, and he's too jumpy to get back to sleep. The house is completely silent. He sneaks downstairs and into the garage, takes the key to the lockbox from where it's tucked away in one of the cubbies. His dad has a hunting rifle and a second handgun. Stiles isn't sure why he needs a second handgun, since he has his service pistol, but he's glad of it right now, since he hasn't learned about shooting a rifle. He takes it and a handful of bullets up to his room. Once it's loaded, he tucks it away in his bedside table drawer and goes back to sleep feeling reassured. When he wakes again, this time he's sure he heard a noise. Just a soft thump. Could have been anything. But whatever it is, he doesn't like it. He slides the gun out of his bedside drawer and hears it again, coming from outside his window. He inches the curtain back slowly and sees a dark figure crouched on the roof like a gargoyle. His heart leaps into his throat and he carefully slides the window up. No matter how quietly he does it, it's not quiet enough to escape werewolf ears. The figure looks over at him, and Derek's sharp glare comes into focus. Stiles lets out a gasping sigh of relief, and then hisses, "What the hell are you doing here? I almost shot you!" Derek frowns at him. "Where did you get a gun?"
"Are you serious?" Stiles asks. "My father's the sheriff. You think we don't have guns in the house?"
For some reason, Derek takes this as, "Please come in, Derek. I'm so glad to see you." He pushes Stiles out of the way and climbs in through the window. Stiles gives him a frustrated look, but doesn't try to stop him. Because, really, such an act would be doomed for failure. Derek has a way of getting what he wants, by either bulldozing opposition or simply pretending said opposition isn't there.
"Seriously,"
he says instead, "what are you doing here?" Derek folds his arms over his chest and resumes glaring. "Scott said that you were worried that Peter might come after you."
"What?"
Stiles hisses. Had he said that? Or had Scott just somehow figured it out? Scott does have the ability to be intuitive, usually at all the wrong moments. He's too irritated at Derek to feel afraid right now, which he supposes is good, since otherwise he thinks he'd feel a chill at that statement.
"What? Do you think he will?"
"No," Derek says. "He's got no reason to."
"So, why are you here?" Stiles asks again. "Because either you're lying in wait for Peter to show up, or you're here to pander me? Which doesn't seem like you. And also, if you were going to stand guard or some shit, you know it doesn't work to make me feel better when I don't know you're doing it, right?"
Derek just gives Stiles one of his typical long-suffering looks. "Scott didn't want me to tell you. He seems to think your dignity might be at stake."
"Since when do you listen to what Scott thinks?" Styles rolls his eyes. You're here because you can't find Peter, and because any idea is better than none. So let's stake out poor, traumatized Styles' house and freak him out in the middle of the night. What a great idea! Go away, Derek. Derek doesn't go away, which doesn't surprise Styles one bit. So he decides to ignore his presence. But he unloads the gun, because his father was very clear about not leaving a gun loaded if he didn't plan to use it. He even checks for a bullet in the chamber, though he's pretty sure he never chambered one. Derek watches him do this with some interest, then says with his typical tact, "You know that wouldn't stop Peter, right?" Styles sets the gun down and thins his lips. "No, but it would slow him down long enough to give me a chance to scream like a little girl, which is about all you think I'm good for." Derek doesn't argue with this, which only annoys Styles more. "Why are you so sure he's alive anyway?" Styles asks, though he's not sure he wants to know. "Wolfsbane bullets, 3 of them, remember?" Derek shifts and says, "He's alive. I'm not Alpha yet." "I thought you had to kill him to become Alpha," Styles says. "It depends," Derek says. "That's what I thought, before I found out that he killed Laura. Laura was my Alpha, so now Peter is. But I would have inherited the position through the family line if Laura had been killed by anyone other than a werewolf. So now, if Peter is killed by someone other than a werewolf, I become the Alpha." Styles thinks all this over and says, "So you never intended to let Scott kill the Alpha, did you? Because Scott would be your boss. All that stuff about a possible cure, that was all bullshit."
"It wasn't bullshit," Derek says. "I never knew whether or not it would actually work. And I told Scott that. It's not my fault if he wasn't listening. And he wouldn't have necessarily been my Alpha. Werewolves don't have to stay in the same pack. If they don't like their Alpha, they can leave the pack and risk being Omega, alone. Or they can join another pack."
Styles throws his hands up in the air in exasperation. "Then why was Peter able to control Scott?"
"Because Peter turned Scott. And because Scott didn't have control."
"You know what? I give the fuck up," Styles decides. "I was trying to sleep. How am I supposed to sleep with you staring at me?"
"I'll sleep too."
Styles doubts that, but he isn't in the mood to argue, since arguing with Derek Hale never gets him anywhere. "Okay, you do that. You just make yourself comfortable over there, big guy."
He flops backwards and stares at the ceiling for several long minutes, listening to Derek rustle around, leaving the light on because he doesn't care if Derek wants it off or not. When he looks up again, to check and make sure Derek isn't watching him sleep, let's face it, creepy. He sees a large, dark gray wolf curled up in the corner of his room. He sucks in a surprised breath and manages to clamp his teeth down on the yelp that almost escapes him.
"Since when can you do that?"
The wolf raises its head and stares at him for a long minute, as if weighing the option of shifting back and answering his question against just putting his head back down and going to sleep. Then he shifts. It's a fascinating process, coming all the way from wolf back to human. And unlike the partial shifts, he ends without clothing on. Styles realizes that the rustling noise was Derek getting undressed. He seems completely immodest, though Styles supposes he has nothing to be ashamed of, and answers the question.
"All werewolves can do this. It's the second stage shift."
"Scott can't," Styles says.
"He can," Derek says. "He just hasn't learned how yet."
"You know," Styles says, "he may not be quite as averse to learning from you if you told him that you could teach him something better than how to make him look like he's from an 80s B-movie.
He meets Derek's glare with a shrug.
"I'm just saying."
In response, Derek shifts back to wolf form, which makes Styles assume that the conversation is over. A minute later, however,
Derek has climbed up onto the foot of the bed and curled up there.
Oh, what? Is the floor too hard for your fragile bones?
Stiles asks, glaring.
Most people wait for an invitation before they crawl into someone else's bed. Not that I'm speaking from experience.
Derek yawns at him and, okay, teeth, impressive, and then closes his eyes. Stiles huffs out a sigh, but the bed is big enough, really, and short of kicking Derek off, there isn't much he can do about it. So he lies back down and closes his eyes, leaving the light on.
Because fuck Derek Hale. That's why.
He's been asleep less than an hour when he has another nightmare. This one about suffocating to death in the trunk. And he wakes up gasping. Derek's wolf form is now next to him, having nudged him awake. Not even aware of what he's doing, Stiles turns and clings to that reassuring bulk, burying his face in Derek's fur until he's regained some semblance of calm. He falls asleep, still leaning against him, and sleeps the rest of the night without dreaming. The sunlight hits him right in the eyes the next morning, because he forgot to close his curtains before going back to bed. Derek is still sprawled out on the bed next to him in wolf form, and actually is asleep. Stiles considers this for a few minutes, before easing out of bed, grabbing his camera, and snapping a quick photograph. He forwards it to Scott with a text saying,
"Look at what Derek can do, but didn't tell you about."
2 minutes later, he gets a text back that says,
"Why is Derek in your bed?"
"Okay, maybe I didn't think that one through," Stiles mutters to himself. He considers for a moment before typing back,
"Because some jackass told him I was afraid Peter was going to come after me."
Scott apparently decides that no response is the best response. Stiles isn't eager to have his father come in and ask what a giant wolf and or Derek Hale is doing in his bed, so he settles for prodding Derek in the ribs until the wolf opens one sleepy eye. The glare is unmistakable, regardless of what face it's on. "Get up," Stiles says, "unless you want my dad finding out you're in here, because he really will shoot you." Derek shifts forms and says, "I was cleared of all charges." "And that will matter to my dad when he finds you in my bed. Why?" Derek glares. "Now put on some goddamn pants before I start taking pictures to bribe Danny with," Stiles says, and then sneaks a few pictures anyway, because damn. "Look, Stiles clears his throat. "Sorry about last night. You know, the..." He winces but spits it out. "The hugging." Derek just gives him a blank look. "Oh, come on," Stiles says. "Don't make me talk about it. Just say, don't worry about it. Try to be reassuring, or at least not a jerk." There's a pause, then a sigh. "It's not a thing," Derek says, "so don't make it into one. Wolves are tactile creatures. It's very common for them to sleep in piles, close to each other." Stiles gives him a long stare. Then he says, "You were trying to convince me that you are a natural cuddler." Derek isn't even glaring now. He actually rolls his eyes. "With my pack," he clarifies stiffly. "I'm not part of your pack," Stiles says. "You're not a wolf," Derek agrees. "But you are part of my pack." Stiles stares again, then says, "You know what? Whatever. I think I'd rather just let you do what you want rather than continue to have this conversation." Derek nods, as if this is as it should be. Stiles does go to the lacrosse game, even though he doesn't want to. He was sure his father would say no, thus giving him a convenient excuse. But instead he says sure, and they go together. Stiles sits in the stands and taps his feet nervously on the ground, feeling the crowd press in on him. Lydia isn't there, but Allison is, cheering Scott on, She tells Stiles about how her father has forbidden her from seeing Scott again. Stiles can't think of a better way to guarantee that Scott will lose his virginity this month. Chris Argent glowers from the stands. Derek is sure to be looking somewhere. So, by all standards, he's perfectly safe. Even Peter probably isn't crazy enough to try something in this gigantic crowd, most of whom know nothing about werewolves. Stiles tells himself that Peter probably skipped town. His revenge was complete, so no need to stick around, right? Especially not when crazy people with Wolfsbane bullets were around. This gives him something of an idea. But first he has to survive the lacrosse game. He feels squeezed from all sides, tight and claustrophobic. It's an effort to keep his breathing even. His father seems blessedly oblivious to his predicament. Allison, who is more sensitive than her boyfriend, reaches down and tightly grips Stiles' hand at one point. She doesn't look at him, doesn't say anything, doesn't make a show of it, just holds his hand. He can understand why Scott fell in love with her. Jackson is in fine form, being his usual douchey self, but Scott is ignoring him for once. They win, of course, because they're awesome. Scott waves to Allison from the field with a mile-wide grin, sees Mr. Argent, and sort of shrinks back into himself. On the whole, it's a successful evening. Kate's funeral isn't as big a deal as it could be, because Sheriff Stilinski managed to keep the whole arson thing quiet, making it seem like Peter Hale was just some crazed serial killer who for some reason liked making his victims look like animal attack victims. Scott wants to go and support Allison, but of course her father won't let him. So instead he plans to lurk in the graveyard. Stiles wants to go and support Scott, but his father figures out what he's doing in about 3 seconds and forbids both of them from going anywhere near the cemetery. So instead they hang out in Stiles' bedroom and talk about how unfair their lives are. Scott tries to transform into an actual wolf without success, so they bitch about Derek for a little while. Then Stiles shows him the pictures he got of Derek's naked ass, and they both snicker like the immature teenagers they are, and debate whether it would make them terrible people to post them on the internet, since you can't see his face after all. So, how bad was it? Scott finally asks. Stiles doesn't need to ask what he's talking about. After a moment, he says, "It was bad. It was just like, there was nothing. No light, no sound, nothing to think about. The boredom alone could have driven me crazy. And I didn't know if you were dead or alive or if anyone would find me." He flops back onto his bed and stares at the ceiling. "It was pretty bad, man." Scott leans against his bed, sitting on the floor. So they're not looking at each other. "Like, chain me to the radiator bad?" "Worse," Stiles says. "A lot worse." They're quiet for a minute. "You know, Derek said a funny thing this morning," Stiles finally says. "He said that I was part of the pack." "Well," Scott shifts slightly. "You are, aren't you?" "I'm not a werewolf." "Yeah, but not all the Hales were werewolves either. Allison's dad said that. That some of the people caught in the fire had been human. I bet they still consider the humans part of the pack. So I guess you don't have to be a werewolf to be part of the pack." "I guess." Stiles feels pretty skeptical about all this. "Besides, of course you're part of the pack," Scott adds. "I mean, you're Stiles." "Well, I can't deny that," Stiles says. "You realize he's going to boss you around all the time now, right?" Scott asks. "I mean, did you say that you were okay with being part of his pack?" Stiles thinks back. "I told him I didn't want to talk about it anymore." Scott lets out a snort of laughter. "Oh yeah, you're screwed." Stiles hits him over the head with a pillow. "You know," Scott says, "this explains the texts he sent me this morning." He pulls it up on his phone and shows it to Stiles. It reads, "If Stiles can accept me as his alpha, and he's a lot smarter than you,
What the hell is your problem?
Styles studies the text for a moment. He looks at Scott. Scott looks at him. In unison, they say,
What a dick!
Did you reply to him yet? Styles asks. No, I ignore these little love notes he sends me. Styles smirks and grabs the phone, typing,
Styles is more man than you'll ever be.
And sending it before Scott can get the phone away from him. You jerk, Scott says, but he's laughing. The phone beeps and Derek's return text is smug.
That's why his status in the pack will always be higher than yours.
Oh, now it's on, Styles says, his fingers tapping away and Scott is grabbing for the phone, but Styles tries to keep it out of reach while his brain comes up with truly hilarious responses to Derek's taunting. But Scott is faster and stronger than he is and manages to snatch the phone away before he can hit send. Styles tries to get it back because, hello, best friends since grade school. This is the kind of shit they do. They're boys. They wrestle. Which is how he winds up with his face mashed into his mattress, with Scott's hand on the back of his neck, freaking the fuck out. Scott's a little dense, so he doesn't notice at first, keeping Styles pinned while he texts Derek with God knows what. But a few seconds later, it occurs to him that it's really not normal for Styles to be making those tiny little whimpering noises in the back of his throat. Whoa, shit, sorry, he says, jumping off the bed and letting Styles go. You okay? He's not okay. He can't breathe. Intellectually, he knows he's having another panic attack, which is all fine and dandy, but he can't break out of it. He never could, back after his mother died. Sometimes his father would have to throw a glass of cold water into his face to snap him out of it. They even talked about putting him on medication for it. But he started to get better, so they didn't. His fists clench down in the blankets, and he gasps for air, feeling his heart rabbiting along his chest, just as terrified and unsteady as he is. Scott is talking to him, saying something. Styles doesn't know what. Then he feels a brush of fur against his hand, and he latches onto it, wrapping his arms around the wolf that's just climbed up beside him, using its body to shield him from the world. Gradually, his breathing evens out. His heart rate slows. He thinks, absurdly, of how touching releases oxytocin, and how scientific studies have proven that it helps with trauma and PTSD. When he's finally gotten himself under control, he blinks at the shaggy, dark brown wolf that's now sitting with him, and says, stupidly, Hey, you figured it out. The wolf blinks at him, then looks down, as if only now figuring out that he has four paws instead of two hands and two feet. He's a little tangled up in his clothes, too, because they didn't really fall off when he shifted. He actually looks kind of ridiculous, and after a few moments, Styles starts to laugh. It feels good, so he laughs harder. Shut up, Scott says, a moment later, when he's managed to get himself back into human form. Although he nearly falls because only one of his legs is in his pants. I thought it would help, damn it. You're the one who was talking about Derek snuggling you in your bed. Excuse me, there was no snuggling. Oh yeah? What was it then? Cuddling? Hugging? Canoodling? You know I have a gun now, right? Scott flops back onto the bed, still laughing at him. Yeah, Styles thinks. Definitely part of the pack. It doesn't make any sense to him, but he's surprisingly okay with it.